This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. In 1984, Congress passed the National Organ Transplant Act to address the nation's critical organ donation shortage and improve organ matching and placement process. The act made it illegal for anyone to give or acquire an organ for material gain. Now, almost three decades later, the act is making headlines again, this time in response to the push to rescind a ruling by a U.S. Court of Appeals from the Ninth Circuit. The court ruled that certain types of bone marrow donors could be compensated. And now the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is attempting to overturn that decision, arguing that bone marrow is subject to the 1984 Act and as such may not be compensated. Dr. Sally Satel is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. She wrote the article, Why It's Okay to Pay Bone Marrow Donors, for Bloomberg.com, so obviously an advocate. Dr. Satel, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
So what is your argument for why it is okay to pay bone marrow donors?
First, it's important to know why we even want to pay bone marrow donors. And the reason is because there are too many people dying, perhaps up to 3,000 people dying a year, who need bone marrow transplants and cannot get them. The problem tends to be not so much that there aren't many donors. A lot of people do go through the cheek swab and get their cells tested to be on the bone marrow registry. But when it comes time for those people to actually donate, to go through with the donation, up to 50% of them actually decline.
So you think compensation would send them over the edge? That would entice them even further?
Yes, that's really the purpose here. It's certainly always to get more people to sign up. There's never enough potential donors, so that's true. But yes, I think that the real virtue to this sort of incentive would be that then they would go through with it. And going through with it, remember, is at the other end of it, is saving someone's life. Actually, in October, this is a really striking and sad case. In late October, a Stanford professor of psychology died after six people who matched with her. Each one of them refused to go on and give the donation. Mm. And let me emphasize here that the method of donation, which played a very big part in why the Ninth Circuit decided that bone marrow stem cells did not fall under the prohibition of the National Organ Transplant Act, the method of obtaining those cells is really not very intrusive at all.
Explain that to us, because in the past, yes. I understand that people were anesthetized. They actually went into their pelvis or some bone-dense area. Tell us how the process has changed since those days.
It used to be, and when I say used to, I mean in 1984 when that law was written, that bone marrow used to be obtained through what was called aspiration. A big hollow needle would be inserted into the hip bone, and it's really quite painful. I actually had one once. It's pretty painful. That form of obtaining bone marrow is still considered illegal in terms of receiving or giving payment for it. But the new way is called apheresis. Actually, it's been around for over a decade, and it is the exact same way in which we collect blood plasma and blood platelets. And I should add, we already have a big industry in which people who give blood plasma are paid for it. And the United States is the biggest exporter of blood plasma. Anyway, in apheresis, a person takes medication for a few days so that the bone marrow stem cells proliferate in their bone marrow. That's within the cavities of the bone. Mm-hmm. But then they're released into the circulating blood. And after 5 days, a person goes in, basically gets their blood drawn, and the bone marrow stem cells, these are cells that go on to differentiate into red blood cells and white blood cells and platelets, they are filtered off. The stem cells are filtered out. The blood is actually returned to the donor, and those stem cells are then given to the person who needs the bone marrow transplant.
Well, my understanding of the distinction between donating plasma and the act on the books about bone marrow is the distinction between blood and tissue. So in this case, you're saying that bone marrow would not be considered tissue.
No. Bone marrow in the cavity, you know, in your hip cavity, for the purposes of NOTA, is considered tissue. Bone marrow stem cells circulate with the blood. And so they're part of blood. That's why the Ninth Circuit did not consider them an organ.
If the process is now akin to donating plasma, which is legal, and you noted there's an industry based on this, fill us in on the case being made by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, what they're pursuing, wanting to maintain a ban on compensation for bone marrow.
Well, the case they're making is that they're worried about disease transmission.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about discouraging altruism. They talk about coercing potential donors. And they talk about exploitation. So one has to wonder, well, how is plasma donation then legal? Because theoretically, to them, these same types of considerations would apply. The idea that if you offer someone money, they can't possibly make a decision in their own best interest. You know, they'll find this an offer that's much too hard to refuse. And again, if that's a problem, and if that's a problem that is so overwhelming, then why are we already allowing people to give eggs and sperm and plasma and even cadavers? I mean, you can will your body at death and to contribute to a medical school, for example, an anatomy lab, and you will get a cremation already paid for. So, I mean, we already have an industry that will pay for body products. So there's no reason to think that this is any different. Plus, we're talking about, again, so many lives that potentially could be saved, and what the advocates and we're really asking for is a chance to study this, to see how much of an effect this kind of incentive will make on people going through with their donations.
I want to pick up on that altruism point with you, Dr. Sally Satel. She's a resident scholar at AEI Public Policy Research, and she actually wrote a book called When Altruism Isn't Enough, The Case for Compensating Donors. I guess the danger here, Sally, is the slippery slope, the idea that, well, if people start paying for bone marrow, then next they're selling kidneys, or the black market for buying and trading organs opens up. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we already have a thriving black market globally in organs, and it's because there's no legal mechanism for exchanging organs for some sort of reward. I mean, when you think about it, why shouldn't someone who's willing to save someone's life and take the risk, they're the only person who takes the risk in the entire process of organ donation who doesn't get anything in return. Now, they get a wonderful feeling, and that says a lot. And if you're a family member, what you want is for your loved one to survive. That's reward enough. But for a lot of people, altruistic and humanitarian, or I should say financial and humanitarian motives, mix all the time. I mean, that's the case with surrogate mothers. Their heart goes out tremendously to women who can't have their own children, and that's a large part of their motivation, but they're not going to engage in a process that's so time-consuming and a bit risky for no reward. Now, I happen to have gotten a kidney from a friend, so I guess you could say that I'm the poster girl for altruism, but I'm not so starry-eyed about it to think that we have to rely on it exclusively, because it's a qualified failure in the organ situation. 18 people die every day because there aren't enough donors. And that's a terrible problem. It gets worse every year. The number of people donating, both living and deceased, those numbers have just about flattened out. So basically, altruism is a stupendous virtue, a magnificent one, and we should foster it as much as we can, but it is an unreliable motivator. And we saw this with the death of that Stanford professor and the 3,000 other people every year who don't get a bone marrow transplant because most people, so many people, I should say, will not go through with it.
Well, Sally, in addition to advocating for this study and research into how a compensation model would work, are you considering that this would be picked up by private organizations or something that would be government regulated? How do you envision it?
I think it would be government regulated, but it could be a registry in which people who participated and received compensation could be run by a nonprofit that is under contract with the federal government or that has government oversight. Logistically, this is not an overwhelming problem at all. I mean, there are other models where there are these so-called public and not even private, public, nonprofit, private partnerships. So that's one model for it.
Sally Satel, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. She's also a practicing psychiatrist and lecturer at the Yale University School of Medicine. Sally, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Sally's latest book is called Brainwash, The Seductive Appeal of Mindless Neuroscience. But you can find a link to read her article advocating for compensation for bone marrow donation at wordofmouthradio.org. There's more word of mouth coming up after the break. Stay with us.